The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a really good show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be featuring an interview with Esther Sternberg from New York City, who is in charge of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's candlelighting campaign. She's been doing it for decades, and this promise is actually, it may sound like a little bit of, Trust me, this is going to be a very entertaining interview. We've got all kinds of good music today. I even got a challenge. Somebody challenged me online. Contact me on rabbifinman.com. Challenged me, and I'll tell you about that challenge. We are done with a cappella, so we're playing good stuff. As you could tell from our intro, all kinds of eclectic and wonderful Jewish music. The portion of the week is the portion of Akev, and it can be found in the book of Deuteronomy. And we're going to take a little break from Rebbe stories, Hasidic stories. We're going to talk about some, give over some of the miracle stories that have been happening as a result of Operation Protective Edge. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli security forces arrested the leader of the Hamas terror cell that kidnapped and murdered Israeli teenagers of Naftali Frankel, Ayal Yifra, and Gilad Shaar. Hussam Kawasame, a resident of Hebron, admitted under interrogation to having orchestrated the kidnapping and said he received funding from Hamas officials in Gaza. A terrorist stabbed a security guard just east of Jerusalem. The guard suffered moderate injuries. He fired at the terrorists, but the attacker ran away to a local Arab village. Several suspects are in police custody. A backhoe driver killed a Jewish man and turned over a school bus before he was killed by Jerusalem police. And a man shot a soldier on Mount Scopus, but got away. Hamas executed close to 36 Palestinians accused of being informants for Israel during Operation Protective Edge. Hamas regularly executes people accused of helping Israel. The Israel Electric Corporation began repairing power lines from Israel to Gaza, damaged in the Israel-Gaza conflict. Workers are guarded by Israeli soldiers in tanks and armored personnel carriers. Now, this, how does that make sense? They're coming, they're fixing up your country, and you want to kill them? Doesn't make any sense. But tell me what does. Israel's Supreme Court ordered a retrial of the Talansky case, in which former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was acquitted of corruption charges. The Jerusalem District Court acquitted Olmert in 2012 on charges of fraud and tax evasion. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison for accepting bribes in what became known as the Holy Land scandal. He is now in jail awaiting final appeals. Doctors at the Erez Field Hospital outside of Gaza evacuated more wounded Palestinians for life-saving medical treatment in Israel. More than 9,500 Palestinians were wounded during 4 weeks of fighting between Israel and Hamas, and many of them received treatment at Israeli hospitals. Molotov, this is disheartening, a Molotov cocktail was thrown at Rabbi Schneur Kesselman and members of the Malmo, Sweden Jewish community as they walked home from synagogue on Friday night. No one was hurt. Kesselman said that they were Arabs. And finally, Jonathan Pollard turned 60 this week. He was arrested in 1985 for spying on the United States on behalf for Israel. Former Israeli President Shimon Peres said that the U.S. government attorneys will consider a deal to release Pollard from prison, hopefully sometime this year. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are online with Esther Sternberg, who is one of the major coordinators of Lubavitcher Rebbe's campaign to encourage women and girls to light candles at the onset of Friday evening of the Sabbath. How are you today, Esther?
Hello there. Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking time to come out and talk to us about it. We've had people on the show recently talking about tefillin, talking about mezuzah, talking about kosher, so it makes sense that one of the major campaigns or major thrust and emphasis on girls lighting Shabbos candles. And you've been involved in it for quite a long time. So tell us about this concept. Why do women and girls light Shabbos candles, Esther?
Well, women have been lighting candles for many thousands of years. It is incumbent upon every Jewish family to have candles lit in honor of the Shabbat, of Shabbos. It brings peace and harmony to the home. And it was entrusted to the Jewish woman because it says that the soul of all Jewish women are the soul of the matriarch of the world. And the Zohar, which is a very special esoteric book, says that a woman was entrusted with it because she is, as we say, the matriarch. And when she does it with gladness of heart and joy, she brings long life to her husband. She brings the power to have children that will light up the world with Torah. And she brings a lot of peace into the world. So the women traditionally have been given this mitzvah. It happens to be that if the woman is not home or if a man lives alone, then he is empowered to light these candles because candles have to be lit in every Jewish home in honor of every Shabbat. However, it was entrusted to the women. And many, many years ago, little girls also lit candles with their mothers. This goes back all the way before World War I. Girls and women all lit candles together. However, with the advent of World War I, it became very impossible to get candles because candles are made from paraffin, and paraffin and gasoline are the same material. They needed the war effort of World War I. So we are told that even if there were two women or three women living in one household, only one would have the chance to light the candles because they were so scarce. And at times, they had to cut the candles into little pieces so they should have one for next week.
Wow,
week
that's
after.
Fascinating. That is absolutely
amazing. Therefore, many girls stopped lighting candles, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe exactly 4 years ago on September, 40 years ago, excuse me, 40 years ago on September 11th, 1974, asked us to start a campaign to make sure that women all over the world light candles, because many in America especially have stopped because when they came after the war, they wanted to be Americanized. They thought maybe they'll look too Jewish, they won't be accepted, and they stopped the practice, and then, of course, they never taught it to their children. So the Rebbe said that there are so many people who haven't stopped doing it or never taught anyone to do it. We should reach out to those women, and even girls from the age of 3 years old and up, they should add their candle. We live, the Rebbe said, in a world of doubly darkness, meaning the spiritual darkness of the world, so many intermarriages and so many problems for the Jewish people. We need every light. And the Rebbe explained that when a little girl will light a candle and say a blessing over the candle, she's bringing a spiritual light into the world, and that's why we should get as many girls as possible to join their mothers. Or even in the case where a mother might not be interested in lighting, the girl should light anyway because it's very great for her and it's very great for the world. So the Rebbe actually initiated this campaign, as I said, on September 11th. The Hebrew date is the 24th of the month of Elul. Exactly, it will be 40 years ago this Elul, which is coming up very shortly. And that's when the Rebbe started to ask us to do something. Now, we didn't officially call it a campaign for another 2 or 3 months because we didn't really understand how to go ahead to do it, but very quickly the Rebbe guided us, and we started a full-fledged campaign.
Okay, now, so that means when you were a little girl, were you
ready? When I was a little girl, I lit candles because in Chabad, we knew that this was the custom. And if you don't mind, I can tell you something very fascinating.
Go ahead, please.
my mother, who does not come from a Chabad home, she comes from a very Hasidic home. Her father was a Rebbe from the Polish Rebbes. She never told me that she lit candles as a girl. And one particular week, right after the Sukkot holiday, she and my father were at the Mayo Clinic for a full-body checkup, which they used to do every few years. And she called me up after Shabbos to tell me that the Rebbe has such a wonderful idea to encourage women to light candles, because she had a miracle happen, and she met a woman who had a very bad diagnosis on Friday. And this woman was crying that she doesn't want to die. She has a family. And my mother said, well, tonight when you light your candles, you should beg God to heal you or to make a miracle for you. So she says, well, I don't know what it is to light candles. So my mother took her to a store in the basement of the hotel at the Mayo Clinic, and they sold candle holders and candles, and she wrote down how to say the blessing. And my mother said, fervently pray that God should cause a miracle for you. And lo and behold, the next morning, this woman is looking high and low for my mother in the hotel that they stayed in near the Mayo Clinic, and she runs over to my mother. She says, you don't know what happened. You can't imagine the miracle that happened. I lit the candles, and I cried to God for about an hour. I begged him, please spare my life. And the next thing I know is this morning I get a call from the doctor. Mrs. So-and-so, I want to tell you that we have completely misdiagnosed you, and you are completely fine. You can go home and forget about everything we said. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Wow. The woman said she knows that this is because she prayed so fervently to God when she lit the candles, and it was a complete miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to my mother, oh, this is great, but how are we going to get to the girls that they feel that it's not their tradition? So my mother says, why? I lit candles as a girl. I said, Mommy, you lit, but you're not a Lubavitcher. So she said, oh, all of the Hasidic, in all the Hasidic dynasties, the girls lit candles. And she told me about a few of her cousins, all these other Polish dynasties, these Rebbe's children were her cousins. And she told me, a few of them, she said, we all lit. So I got very excited, and I wrote this to the Rebbe, and I said that I just found out that it was not something that was just in Lubavitch, but it was in all the Polish dynasties, and that my mother herself lit. So the Rebbe asked me to do a survey, and I called up many Rebbetzins from other Polish dynasties that happened to be my mother's cousins, and I called them up, and they all concurred. Yes, our daughters lit. Some lit at 6 years old, some lit younger, some at 12 years old, but they all lit candles as girls. And for some reason, they never told the Hasidim of their group to do it. Only the children of the Rebbes did it. But it's definitely not something new. It's something that was either for certain people only, or it was actually widespread because, as I said, like they had stopped it because of the war problem.
Okay, so I guess if you're just joining us, Esther Sternberg, we're talking about candle lighting, the significance before the onset of the Shabbos and the Lubavitcher Rebbe's Mifsa campaign, which is found out is now going celebrating its 40th anniversary. How did you get involved? Everybody knows that if you need to know anything about candle lighting, then you call Esther Sternberg.
Well, I'm very fortunate to have been raised in a family that my father was very close to. All the Rebbes of Chabad that he lived through, he actually lived through three of them. He was a child at the time of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe in the city of Rostov, and actually saw him and was in that house and in that shul a lot as a child. He was very close to the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe from the first day that he became Rebbe, actually earlier until the day of his passing, and he was very close to our Rebbe all the years. But even earlier than that, his family was very close, all the way to the very first Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, as we call the Alter Rebbe. So because my father was such a staunch Hasid of Chabad, I sort of developed it by osmosis to have a very strong feeling that if the Rebbe wants something, we have to do. So as soon as I heard that Rebbe wants this campaign, I felt, okay, I have to see what I could do. And I also happened to be involved in the Lubavitch Women's Organization. And that particular year, I was on the rotating basis of being the president for that year. And a few days after the Rebbe said this at the at that date, as I told him, September 11, he wanted a newspaper article put into the Jewish language paper to let everybody know about this campaign. And I was looking for a way to get this. I don't know how to put a big, beautiful ad. I'm not in that line. But I called somebody that worked in the newspaper, and he said to me, if you give me the material of what the Rebbe said, I'll produce an ad for you. And he produced a beautiful, he wrote it beautifully, he designed it beautifully, and I got the credit from the Rebbe, and he was so happy. So once I made the Rebbe happy, I said, well, I have to do more to make the Rebbe happy. So that's how it started, that they knew that I did something. And anybody that called to the Rebbe's office about what the Rebbe spoke about the candle lighting campaign, it was directed to me, even though it was not yet a beginning of a campaign, but anybody that had any question was directed to me. So I started whatever it was. And then the first time I wrote a report to the Rebbe of what I did, which was very, very minimal, and I really did not want to write the report because I used to write reports only when I did a lot, and I felt I did so little. But I was coerced by the secretary. The Rebbe's secretary said, the Rebbe hasn't heard about anybody doing anything yet. It's just a beginning. Please write whatever you did. I know you did a few things. So I finally was coerced into writing my first report. And within 5 minutes, I get an answer from the Rebbe. Thank you very much for the good news about the lighting of the Shabbos candles that I received a few moments before the time of the lighting of the Shabbos candles, because I wrote the letter very late on Friday. So I decided every Friday I have to be able to write to the Rebbe a report of what I did. I better do something, so I should have a report. So we started doing. And we went to newspapers and to radios. We got radio time to announce it, and we got newspaper ads, and we started printing a brochure that we distributed in the hundreds of thousands, giving people the instructions and the candle lighting times. And ultimately, we produced a candle holder that we could distribute, something that was quite inexpensive. And we actually produced over 9 million of these candle holders in the process of these 40 years that we distributed like rainwater to anybody. We gave them out to girls. We gave them out to women. We gave them out in supermarkets, and we gave them out in schools. We went to visit schools all over, of course, here in New York, and, of course, I supply it to many other cities. As a matter of fact, Detroit just asked me for 500 of those candle holders to distribute, and that's what we're still manufacturing, the same one. Actually, the Rebbe designed the candle holder.
Is that right?
That's a very fascinating story. I don't know how much time you have, but I have lots
we still
to tell
we
you.
Have this is fascinating. This is stuff I've never even thought about. The standard candle holder that we gave out is like it's a brass and has like a cup shaped bottom and then a loop shaped center and then a cup shaped top that just everything, you put the candle in it and it's like, you know, it's good to go. So you're telling me that the Lubavitcher Rebbe made that design?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. Yes, he designed it, because what happened was that in the beginning we just were looking for anything, because somebody had called me up that he wants candle holders, and we didn't even think we were going to distribute them, and I didn't want to disappoint him, because he said if it comes from Lubavitch, I'm sure it will have much more success. And I couldn't tell him I didn't even have an idea of distributing them, so I said, well, I'm expecting a shipment by the end of the week, so it gives me some time to get something. So I started looking. Nobody had candle holders for sale, but there was a glass company that manufactured something out of glass, like a little star. And they used to do that at bar mitzvahs. They would put one candle in the star candle holder. So I bought those, and we distributed those. And shortly after that, a certain gentleman that had a business of manufacturing metal, different things of metal, contacted us that he would like to make a candle holder, and he wanted to show me what he did. And he made a candle holder that was very tall. I would say it was about 10 inches tall.
Oh.
On a very slim stick that was like in a shape of, as you would, like an open V, perhaps, like a, such a, I don't know why, on a very narrow base. And I said, why did you do this design? And he said, well, I thought it was modern art. Anyway, he designed it, and this is what he had, and I bought 10,000 pieces from him. And we were distributing it. And then one day I get a call from the Rebbe's office that he wants me to put a sticker on the bottom of the candle holder. There's a very pretty sticker, and we should have a place there where the child can write her name and the school she goes to, and this will be promoted by the principals of the school, because they'll be very proud that their name is on the sticker. So within one day, I got somebody to produce a beautiful design for me for this sticker, and I was so proud that I did it one day, and I sent it into the Rebbe's office, and within 15 minutes, I get a phone call from the Rebbe's secretary that how dare I distribute a candle holder that is so not stable, it could tip over very easily, because it was very tall and on a very narrow base, very small in circumference. And I burst out crying, because here I thought I was so happily doing what the Rebbe wanted, and he said, how dare I do something that's dangerous? This could topple over and cause a fire, and parents will not let their children light. So I didn't know what to do, and I cried and cried and cried, and so I figured, I can't cry, I have to just do something. And I was looking to contact this manufacturer. It was very hard to find him. And finally he said, well, I don't know what to do. I said, well, try to make something that's safe, and not so tall, and more stable, and a wider bottom so that it could have more stability. And he said, all right, I'll make a few samples and give them to the Rebbe. So It was given into the office. We don't just walk into the Rebbe's room. It was given to his secretary. I understand that there were five. I mean, I saw them. They were in rough. They were not yet polished, but five different ones. And the Rebbe didn't like any one of the five, but he chose the cap of one, the place where the candle goes in. He chose that circular ring from a second one, and he chose the base that's about 4.5 inches in circumference from a third one. And he said, this should be the top, this should be the middle, and this should be the bottom. And that's exactly the star we've been producing now, I would say, more than 39 and a half years. So this gentleman produced it in his factory in Brooklyn. He did it for many years, I would say about 20 years or 22 years, until his business closed down, and then we had to go to Hong Kong. We went to China. We went here and there, and we keep manufacturing whatever we could try to get the best price, but we keep the exact same style because that's what the Rebbe wanted.
Amazing.
They happen to be very safe because they're not too tall, and they're quite a wide bottom so that they are stable on the table. The Rebbe never wants us to use anything very low. Actually, somebody wanted to produce something in Israel. It was a small candle holder, and somebody, there was a different manufacturer in New York who wanted to join him, and they were going to give it to me for half price. This manufacturer in New York said, I will share the cost with you. And it was going to be such a good deal for me. I asked the Rebbe, I sent him the candlestick. He said, it's too short, too close on the table, it could cause a fire. Because when something is very short, it can catch onto a napkin, and God forbid you have a fire. So the Rebbe wouldn't let me buy those, although it would have been such a wonderful buy for me. It would have been so much less money. But the Rebbe was more worried about the safety. So we are producing these same candle holders now. It'll be almost 40 years from when he started it, and that's what we keep reproducing.
Okay. If you're just joining us again, our guest is Esther Sternberg. We're talking about the candle lighting, Shabbos candle lighting campaign. We talk when we talk to the other people who are talking about the various mitzvahs, these various campaigns, as to the efficacy of just like seeing a person doing it once and having them walk away. Like, what happens if a person just puts on tefillin once and then they just go on their merry way? The Rebbe didn't tell people to keep Shabbos. He just wanted women and girls to light Shabbos candles. Maybe you could talk about that, maybe a little philosophy about just a candle without any, with no strings attached, Esther Sternberg?
Well, I'll explain something to you. The Rebbe's goal in his life, and something he passed on to us that we don't stop thinking about every moment of the day, is that we have to reach out to Jews to do just one more mitzvah. Every mitzvah counts for itself. Now, even if this woman or girl is going to light the candle once, and then she's going to walk away and go to the movies or do something that's against Shabbos, but she has performed the mitzvah of lighting the candle. And the Rebbe said that every mitzvah is a mitzvah in itself. Now, there are thousands or hundreds of thousands of examples how people have changed their lives because once a candle was burning, the spirituality of the candle made them think about Shabbos, and then they decided, well, maybe we should actually refrain from doing things against Shabbos because the candle is burning. And many children had started to light when their mothers were not yet ready, and then the mothers decided to join because sort of out of embarrassment or sort of just feeling, oh, this is really beautiful. And then people started having a Friday night meal, and that doesn't mean they started keeping the whole Shabbos, but at least they had a Friday night meal, which led to a lot of discussion about what Shabbos is. It led to a lot of discussion about what religion is, and we have stories upon stories upon stories of people who have changed their lifestyle and had started to keep Shabbos because of their initial lighting at once. Now, just like you asked, if you give it out to somebody and they just light it once, you can ask the question, what is if you give it out to somebody and they just walk away, they're not even interested, and maybe they're going to throw it in the garbage or just put it away. So there are many stories of people who have said at the time, well, I'm really not interested, but then they rethought it, and weeks or perhaps months later, they did start. So we never give up on trying to approach somebody and hoping to get them interested, and we believe fervently that even if they're not interested today, they might be interested next week or next month, and we will reach them. I have a very interesting story, if you have time. A woman was needy. She used to go shopping every Friday to a certain big department store, and the girls would go out to give candle holders to these people, and she kept saying, no, 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 it's not for me, it's not for me. And she said to herself, if they approach me 100 times, on the 100th time I'm going to do it. And lo and behold, I don't know if she counted 100 or if it was 80 times, whatever it was, she felt it was 100 times. She took it, and she loved it. And she loved it so much that she was once on a trip to her grandchildren in North Carolina, and I got a phone call. I wonder if I could come pick up some candle holders for my grandchildren in North Carolina. And I said, be my guest, come and pick them up. And then I see this fancy woman walks into my house, and it's a Friday afternoon in my house. And all I'm doing, I did everything at first from my house before we started an office in my basement. And in the middle of my cooking, in the middle of taking care of my children, I'm giving her the candle holders. And I just said, what prompted you to do this? She said, well, I made a vow that if they come to me 100 times, I'm going to do it on the 100th time. And they did persevere. And I finally did it. And I love it. And I think it's wonderful. And I want my grandchildren to light too. So that led into a whole changeover in her grandchildren's family. And then I got a call from her daughter that her husband wants a pair of tefillin, and the whole family changed their life slowly but slowly and became more observant.
Initial beginning.
So we don't give up.
Initial, it's a good beginning. I've often heard, and maybe you probably have this answer then, and maybe you just did, is somebody handing a woman a candle and saying, but wouldn't it be hypocritical? I don't keep the Sabbath. You want me to usher in the Sabbath? And then I'm going to go watch television, or I'm going to go out tonight. And what's so?
Right, so this is exactly what I said. And every mitzvah is a mitzvah for itself. At least she has done this mitzvah of lighting the Shabbos candle. And whether she feels it's hypocritical or not, she doesn't realize that it will somehow seep into her, and she will change her ways because she will be blessed with a candle. There's a lot of blessings that come with the candles. The Zohar said that there are so many blessings that come to the house that even if she doesn't realize it, the blessings will be coming to her, and she's going to change her mind at some point. So if she thinks it's hypocritical, she should just be told that every mitzvah is a mitzvah in itself.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting analogy, again, with the word mitzvah.
Mitzvah actually is spelled different from mitzvah.
Correct.
Mitzvah means a campaign,
mm-hmm.
and mitzvah, of course, is a commandment or a good deed that we do. So the mitzvah is a Hebrew word for a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Rebbe started, he started a few campaigns. Actually, we had these 10 very special campaigns, and there were 5 that were started before the candle lighting campaign, and that was the one of learning Torah and of having mezuzot in every house and of giving tzedakah and having a house full of svarim.
And tefillin.
And so the 6th one was the candle lighting. And we already were used to the idea of having a mitzvah because they started these trucks, they transformed these, I don't know what they're called, these tanks. We call them tanks, but actually they're SUVs or something, where they would go out in the street and call people in to put on tefillin, and then they would give them a tzedakah pushka, and then they would talk to them about mezuzot, and they would talk about lighting Shabbos, well, this was before even lighting Shabbos candle, and learning about Torah, and this is how they would stop people in the street. And then, of course, with the advent of the candle lighting campaign, they would also distribute candlesticks and brochures. The brochure comes with all the instructions of how to light and when to light and proper blessing in transliteration, which I must say is something very important because there are a lot of people that don't know the blessing and have not been lighting because they don't want to say the English words, are blessed art thou, God our God. They want to say the Hebrew words, but they can't read Hebrew. So we have it in transliteration, and it makes it very easy for anybody to be able to say the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So the brochures in themselves, even without the candle holders, are very important. And every year we print another one, and we print them for many, many different cities with the cities that they need, many different lots for different various emissaries all over the United States. And people are distributing brochures to people to help them know the correct time and the correct blessing for every Shabbat and also for the Jewish holidays.
Cool. That is also awesome. What I want to point out, the word campaign is a military term. You use the word tank to describe the vehicles. The word neshek, which is abbreviation for Neira Shabbos Kodesh, which means ammunition. I mean, you know, so the Rebbe seemed to turn this into a war.
Actually, the Rebbe used it as ammunition against assimilation. And it's ammunition that we can, through this, we can hopefully, change the concept by people of their intermarriage, of people wanting to stay within the Jewish fold. And he used the word neshek as ammunition to use. It didn't have to be a war. It was just ammunition to help get the people the right frame of mind. Or maybe if you want to say it's a war, it was not a war with tanks. It was a war with holy candles and spirituality.
Okay, cool. That's going to wrap us up. We've been talking to delightfully with Esther Sternberg, who is in charge of the Rebbe's Nesha campaign. Has Nesha come into the 21st century? Is there a website for candlelighting time?
Well, there are two websites. There's one website that's part of Chabad.org. They could go to Chabad.org and go on to candlelighting. They could go to ShabbatCandles.org, ShabbatCandles.org. And then we have, without a website, we just have ShabbatCandles@AOL.com for any information that they would want. That would just be an email address.
This has been awesome. Thank you so much, Mrs. Esther Sternberg, and we wish you continued success onward and upward.
Amen. Okay.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968. MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. That was indeed fascinating, and I was entertained. I was having a good time. It's good to have, at least I get something out of the deal. Anyway, this is brand new. We had on the show, I think it was the beginning of 2012, we had Lenny Solomon of Schlock Rock fame come on, and he was in the midst of writing a musical, the story of Daniel in Babylon, based on the book of the first nine chapters of the book of Daniel, a musical, an operetta, as a matter of fact. So he did a Kickstart campaign. He's got something up and running because I got, it's from him, Daniel in Babylon. This is Give Me Strength.
Everything I knew is now replaced by something else instead. No longer can I see the path it was. What lies ahead, I simply do not know. The games we used to play, the way we used to dance around with glee, the way we used to live. Possibilities. Now I'm on my own to face the world alone. How can I continue every day? I turn to you. Give me the strength. What can I say?
I'm insecure, not sure that I can stand up to this task. The tears have the flow, the past I knew will never fade away. No place that I can go, nowhere that I can run away.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Moving along with this segment of the show, this is Barry Weber. We've played him before. Tate Helfmir is the name of the song, which is Yiddish for basically, God, I need your help.
Help and joy, help and joy, help and joy. Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Okay, so somebody contacted me on www.rabbifinman.com with a challenge. I said, we're not interested in this, like, klezmer stuff that you play, and it's, like, very nice that you have the swing klezmer and the hip-hop klezmer and the jazz klezmer. We want something straight klezmer, and we want something that you've never played before. So, going deep into the bowels of the archive of the Jewish Hour, we pulled up. This is Naftali Brandwein, the king of the klezmer clarinet. Where were you before Prohibition? Let's listen. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. 624-9800. Herschel Feynman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Akev. That's what we'll be reading in the synagogue. It is found in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 7, verse 12 and following. It continues Moses' soliloquy to the Jewish people before his passing. And we're still in that part, which deals with an overview and a little philosophy as to how the Jews should conduct themselves when they go into the land of Israel. There's two statements that are made in this week's portion. And being that they were put in the same portion must mean that they have relevance one to the other. The first one, it says, God says that the land of Israel, yes, it's a great land. It's a land flowing of milk and honey. It's a land with wheat and barley and grapes and pomegranates, etc. It is the land that the eyes of God are upon from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Which means, that last statement, the eyes of God are upon from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, means that this is a land that it's, as far as lands go, the most protected. It's the most special. There is a reason why Jews refer to Israel as the Holy Land. Because there's the holiness, the godliness, the spirituality is permeated through and through the very core, even to the dirt of Israel. This leads us to towards the end of the portion, there's what's referred to as the second paragraph of the Shema, which states that if you will listen to me and follow my commandments, then the earth will produce its fruit, etc. And if you don't, v'chara af Hashem b'hem, the earth, the Lord's wrath will be kindled against you. So we see that there's sort of like a natural progression from one to the other. There's a question which is asked in the Talmud as to why is it in the Shema, which the Shema is the focal point of our daily morning prayers and our daily evening prayers. It is consists of two paragraphs with a third paragraph tacked on later. Why is the first paragraph first and the second paragraph second? And the simple answer is, well, the first paragraph was in last week's portion. The second paragraph is in this week's portion. So the first one was first and the second one was second, but that doesn't answer the question. We could then restate the question, well, how come this week's portion isn't in last week's portion and last week's portion isn't in this week's portion? The simple answer which is given in the Talmud is that last week's portion, the portion of the Shema, which also has in it the commandment of the putting on tefillin in the morning by men over 13 years of age, and the mezuzahs, the scrolls on the doorposts, and learning Torah and believing in God, and loving God and believing that God is one, that's all in last week's portion. That's referred to as accepting upon oneself the yoke of heaven. And this week's portion, it talks about doing all the commandments. That if you do all the commandments, everything will be way cool. And you'll be able to live in the Holy Land. Now, most people, I think probably pretty much all the people listening to this show, are not living in Israel. And there's a good portion of people that I know, from judging from the fan mail, that aren't Jewish. Is there a lesson here for everybody? Listen, if it's true, it's true. There's no true for the Jews and true for non-Jews. There's no Muslim truth and Buddhist truth and Hindu truth and atheist truth. True is true. That's the definition. It's true for everybody. We have an obligation of making our environment the Holy Land. The Holy Land is not a geographic piece of earth. The Holy Land is a state of mind. A person could be living in Israel and living outside Israel. A person could be living outside Israel and living inside the Holy Land. The idea being that, since we're told in this week's portion, you'll do my commandments. For Jews, that's 613, which we've talked about before. Being that we live outside of Israel and there's no temple, so it's about 60 you shoulds and about 100 you shouldn'ts. And for people who aren't Jewish, the seven commandments of believing in God, not worshiping idols, not committing adultery, theft, or murder, not being cruel to animals, and adhering to the laws of the country and hoping you went and voted last Tuesday, because that's also part of it, making sure that there are legislative bodies, police forces, and judicial systems to maintain the other six. So that's how we make a Holy Land. What we really need to do, so people ask me, what do I want from the Jewish hour? Okay, so I conclude. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. That's all very well and good. Maybe said a little bit glibly, what we really want is that everybody should make a Holy Land. That's the goal. We've got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest way? Go to my website. If you haven't seen my website yet, just do it one time. www.rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN.com. On the homepage, I make it easy. You don't have to go looking for the contact me link, which is up in the left-hand corner at the bottom of the page in sub-readable script. It's right in the middle of the welcome page. You click on it, you get my email box, I get your email, and you've contacted me. It's a wonderful thing. You could ask me any question, you can make any statement, you can debate me on something that I said, you could debate me on something I didn't say, you can write criticism. I love criticism because that way you get a better show. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show. Did you miss Rabbi Stein talking about the Tefillin campaign? Did you miss the Consul General of Israel talking about the Gaza campaign a couple weeks ago? They're still up there. Go listen, check out the archives. We also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, and Hasidic U-Story, which are hopefully entertaining and educational missives of the portion and the portion of the week, the Jewish calendar and Hasidic stories, which are found in written and video form, written by yours truly, especially for you. There's a classes page. I teach a class in Tanya, which is an esoteric work, and I make it not so esoteric and try to make that also entertaining and educational. And the very, very, very important donations page, I don't have to say again, we're still looking at July. We try, we're getting there. Every dollar helps. Go to rabbifinman.com. After you peruse all the other pages, take a look at the donations page. You see how easy it is to become a contributor. Whatever it happens to be, have in mind that every month I'm going to go to rabbifinman.com. I'm going to give $5, $10, $18. 18 has a numerical value of life. Every Hebrew number has a numerical equivalent. Every Hebrew letter has a numerical equivalent. 18 is life. That's a good one. 36 is double life. And give something. Give life. The Jewish Hour now in its 18th year. Go do it. Quick story. This is from Gaza. The miracles are unbounding. We talk about the eyes of God upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. We talk about that rockets were landing in open areas, but it never occurred to me until I saw, what does it mean, an open area? An open area means a space in between two buildings in Ashdod. The sirens went off, people went into the protective rooms, they heard a thud, they didn't hear an explosion. They look out, all the lights are out because it's black, it's, you know, curfew and that type of stuff. They didn't see it. The next morning they came out. there was a rocket, unexploded, landed within a space of 12 feet between two buildings. They had to call in the police zappers, told everybody to go into your protective rooms. They heard a loud explosion. The building shook. Thank God, miraculously, nobody was hurt. That's going to do it for today. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week, and we hope to see you again next week. Take care.
True story. A Seattle man went to bed with nearly $300,000 in his bank account. By morning, the money had vanished because of some identity thief. Can you